So next month, we'll celebrate 5 years of worshiping together as the table at Central United Methodist Church. And if you've been with us for a little bit of that time, you might think that when we do a series called Earth Honoring Faith, clearly Matt and Linda thought this out, and being outside was part of a long-term strategic plan. This was an intention. It sounds very reasonable, and it is so not true. We did not plan to be out here. We were the beneficiaries of a phenomenal, generous gift of $30,000 that's helping us to restore and renovate the sanctuary, and it just so happens that that coincides with this worship series that we find ourselves in at this moment. And so on the surface, it feels again like this is just God working for us. This is perfect. We're outside, earth honoring faith. God bless the grass. It's coming up through the concrete. Perfect. Sermon done. But then we realize that the series finds itself this week in consumption. And so I want to just acknowledge the irony that it is our materialism, that our need for having the concrete restored to its original beauty and to get some carpet that isn't a tripping hazard because it's been in there for a few years too long, and pew cushions that desperately needed to be renewed. It is just that materialism that displaced us from the sanctuary, so we come outside to talk about our need not to consume so much or be materialistic, and so here we find ourselves. We can't escape the irony, and I think God laughs at us when we try to. So there is a general truth to the fact that no matter who we are or how simply we long to live on this earth, we can't but consume. We can't but find ourselves trapped, it seems, at times in the midst of that. We just can't escape it. If anyone watches John Oliver last week tonight, you saw the bitter end, oh, I hope it's the bitter end, toward which this can go. He did a feature on the prosperity gospel. This is maybe 2 weeks back or so. And he lifted up that this is a movement that kind of came to fruition in the 70s and 80s as pastors started to identify that if you seed these pastors money, not literal seeds, but if you give them money, then you will be returned tenfold by God's blessings. So the basic gist is you give money to the pastor. The more you give, the more you will receive. That's a convenient thing, the way that works out. And this has become more and more prominent with televangelism in the 70s and 80s. And so John Oliver exposed that. There was one pastor who in Atlanta was raising from his congregation $65 million for his personal jet. And another pastor who was in the front of who was on television saying that his first jet he paid cash for, but he can feel that people around in the sanctuary, they're jealous. And God is going to respond to that jealousy by buying an even more expensive jet for this pastor just a few weeks later that he was also going to pay cash for. So you can see the absurdity toward which the prosperity gospel goes, or the trap of materialism that we find ourselves in. And it's pretty hard to square that with the reading that Linda just shared from James. And I want to just repeat verse 27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. So instead of selling faith and cashing in on private jets, James is pretty clear that our practice of faith, our religion, should call us to do two things: care for the orphans and the widows that are in distress, and keep ourselves unstained by the world. This is James's way of saying, care for the most vulnerable among you. So in James's day, those were widows and those were orphans. And it seems that in our day, as we try to practice our Christian faith in ways that might reflect the vitality and also the integrity of James's call, we're going to have to discern what that means for us, who the most vulnerable in our midst are. And it seems that the fate of the most vulnerable in our time is inextricably linked to the fate of the earth. And so as we gather in this series, looking back on James's call to care for the most vulnerable in his time, there is a way in which that we can't escape God's call for us to care for the most vulnerable, and those are them who live most closely to the earth, who rely most fully on this in our time. The relationship between this is was clarified for me in Earth Honoring Faith by a book by Larry Rasmussen. And I want to invite you to think about the most recent time you were on a hike. I know Jamie led some folks yesterday from her kitchen table and others as well. I want you to think about a time when you were on a hike. For our family, we like to go up to Echo Lake. And there is a beauty, a reverence that you find after you're moving through, especially when you have a five-year-old who's like on your shoulders and you've gone for a couple of miles. And you get to that place where you can see the water right there in front of you. And then it takes you time to get down, to move down the trail to that space. There is a reason that we take hikes like that. There is a way in which it inspires awe and wonder in us when we're in those spaces, that we see in the beauty of God's creation in that water something profound, something that calls us towards a way of reverence, a way of awe. And now I want you to think about the kind of poetry that this inspires. It's just a water bottle, right? And when we're done with it, we recycle it, we toss it out, and we move on our way. It is the very same water that inspires reverence and awe after a couple mile hike and becomes literally nothing to us as we pass so quickly through our days. Or some of us find that we're not going to, we're gonna care for the earth. And so our seminaries send us do justice, love kindness, walk humbly, water bottles, so we don't have to use that, but we still rely on the plastic right here. And I can say with all honesty, very often I don't experience this as something of sacredness. The water just is there for me. There's a way in which we make the earth into a commodity and then we market it. We do the same thing with people. And then we consume it. And as we do that, this seems like the obvious prescription for alienation from our brothers and sisters that we just sang about, and also from God's creation and the grass that we take for granted. So I want us to invite us to think for just a moment about how we got to this space. Larry Rasmussen reminds us that the roots of mass consumption run deep, really, really deep. He traces it back to the Second World War as this time of transition, marked here in the United States and then in Europe and then followed closely in Japan and East and Southeast Asia. What we find ourselves moving out of is a depression and the sacrifice of war years, and then the return home of tens of thousands of troops all in their working years, and a need to rebuild after our world's most destructive of wars. And so policy and social change and global infrastructure started to develop, to take shape in ways that celebrate global consumerism. And it's laid out for us. There was a speech that the U.S. Secretary of Treasury gave in 1944. And he lays out this assumption that's pretty ubiquitous in our day. It's this assumption that global consumerism can go on infinitely. There is no end in sight. And so this is what he says. All peoples of earth are to enjoy the fruits of material progress on the earth, infinitely blessed with natural resources. Infinitely blessed with natural resources. The same ones that we take for granted in those water bottles. They need only to embrace the elementary economic axiom that prosperity has no fixed limits. It is not a finite substance to be diminished by division. So, if that went shoo, let's try Bride Magazine. Let's see what Bride Magazine says. This one was a little easier for me to get my head around. This is in the Newlywed Magazine. This is what you're supposed to hear. This is in the early 60s. When you buy the dozens of things that you never bought or even thought of before, you are helping to build greater security for the industries of this country. What you buy and how you buy it is very vital to your new life and to our whole American way of life. See, materialism and acquisitiveness, they're not simply choices that we make. They're embedded within our cultural systems in ways that steer the good life toward a purchase, toward buying our own happiness. And it becomes actually actually at its most raw an expression of what people identify then as patriotism. To be patriotic then becomes to purchase, to sell, and to be a buyer of commodities. Larry writes that this is institutionalized spirituality and morality, with economic globalization the most universal of faiths. So followers of Jesus, in the midst of that universal faith, are going to have to find some critical ways to live in the irony that we are sitting outside, displaced because of our material desire for beauty and a sanctuary, and here we find ourselves. So how are we going to live in the midst of those tensions? To be clear, the biblical world that James is writing in had no sense of the late capitalism that we know now, or any sense of globalization. But James was intimately aware that our own way of practicing our faith can become divorced from what we think of as our spirituality. So the ways that we understand or hope to be get caught up, and then they don't reflect how we are out in the world. So James says it this way: be quick to listen and slow to speak, slow to anger. And then makes this back and forth comparison. That to speak and to be angry are on the opposite side of to slow down and to be attentive. And then James invites us to look in a mirror. And so it seems to me that that's what part of our desire during this worship series is to look at ourselves in the mirror. And James identifies that in his day, you can look at yourself and then go right off and not be changed at all. Not be aware of what you just saw. And that feels really true. Like, we could sit in this space and not acknowledge the tension that we find ourselves in, because I desire for beauty in a sanctuary that inspires awe and wonder and creativity and helps us to be more faithful in following in God's ways. We cannot acknowledge that. We could look away from it and think it's not really there. James, though, wants us to have our outer ways of being reflect our inner desires of how God longs for us to be. And so we're invited to listen and to look at what really is in our own lives. This is our community's expression of it, but each of us lives in that tension as well, around consumption and materialism and a desire to say no to those traps that we find ourselves in. For me, it's one of the very reasons that we are outside on this day, to simply acknowledge and look in the mirror at who we are. And I want to invite us for just a moment to learn from the deep tradition of Christian faith, to think about how we're going to move forward with that. One of the strands of Christianity that doesn't get as much play as the prosperity gospel, the movement that we talked about, the seeding faith, if you give us dollars, they'll come back to you somehow in tenfold fashion. The counter to this has been known as asceticism. And in our world, we tend to know asceticism primarily through its older sisters in faith in Hinduism and also in Buddhism. But there's a strand of Christianity that has always embraced the aesthetic life as well. And Linda and I believe that this strand of faith has something profound to teach our community of faith in this day as we try to make our way in ways that honor God's earth and our sisters and brothers and all of creation in it. At the center of an ascetic way of life is life in God. The way we talk about that in Scripture is this choice between God and mammon, mammon being this world, this corrupting culture, the culture that calls us to pave over everything with concrete and then to try to repress the grass that keeps coming up through it. Perhaps one of the best ways to think about asceticism in our day is to think of Gandhi. Gandhi is known for schools called ashrams. They're schools of discipleship. Gandhi's schools were about simple living and shared labor, self-reliant community using local materials and crafts and daily prayers and instructions. These became the markers of an ascetic way of life that Gandhi called us to. And these are also, in his day, they were interfaith and earth-honoring. And we hope that our kitchen tables and our worship together has the potential to be a contemporary expression of just that kind of earth-honoring faith that's rooted in the ways that Jesus taught us to move and to live and to have our being. So we want to think of this as we gather outside as just one more moment in the life of our community's ashram, our time of trying to learn to follow in the ways of Jesus together. The Christian ascetic tradition invites us to think about these ways of practicing our faith. And I want to invite you to hold these in your own journey. First is traveling light. Traveling lightly. We can always manage with less than we even imagine. Letting go. We are to learn to relinquish, I need this one huge, our desire to control. So living, traveling light, and then letting go. And through that process, we open up. We're called to create bonds, to reunite, to reconcile with our neighbors on that walk that Jamie led, with one another, as we take time away to be together, opening up. In that process, we also soften. How can we make our communities less savage, more inhabitable? That's what ascetic communities have been trying to figure out throughout the generations. And that calls us to tread lightly, to not hurt or stop wounding the environment around us, to live simply, not complicating our relationships with each other and with the environment by trying to intentionally consume less. And all of that leads to cessation, not always renunciation or escape. There have been strands of asceticism that call for escape, and that's true and that's real. And I want to invite us to simply stay in some of those tensions and try to be together in this form of learning together to be disciples, followers of the way, because it's in that that we find our authentic humanity. See, without asceticism in this moment that keeps driving toward the accumulation of more as the good life, it seems to me that we're going to need to draw on the deep well of asceticism in order to simply even continue to be human together. So our sanctuary renovation is an expression of that. It's a desire for beauty and for wonder in simplicity. It's taking concrete that was stained over the way we found it, pink and salmon last week. It was because in the 1960s we had this new way of doing concrete. For the very first time, we could add color to concrete. We had two choices, charcoal black or brick red. And in the name of beauty and simplicity, I think at the moment, they chose to go with the brick red. And it turned out pinkish salmon, not beautiful in a sanctuary that has none of those colors. Yes? Not at all. And so in a desire to go back to a simple form, we've tried to strip that down and to just let it be in its original form in that way. And then around it, this desire to have carpet and to have pew cushions that evoke and allow us to look toward the beauty of that space all around and to be inspired toward creativity and wonder and hope. See, there are folks probably in our midst right now and arguments that could be made, you know, to follow the way of James, to live our lives in ways that reflect and meet the needs of the most vulnerable. The right thing to do, the faithful thing to do, would be to sell this entire property and to use every single penny for direct service, and that would be the best way to go. That would be the most faithful way to go. And I think it's an interesting thing, an interesting tension for followers of Jesus to hold. But in the end, for me, it feels like we are going to have the most sustained long-term capacity to transform lives by protecting and watching over in love a space that continues to inspire and evoke people to go out and be passionate in the world, to be the kind of change that they long to see, to live that out, to practice their faith in ways that are simple and beautiful and bend toward justice. There is no $65 million jet on the horizon for our community, but there is a longing for simplicity and hope and love that we find in that space, and that every now and again we're reminded of in this very moment. that we will continue to be the kind of community that is the grass that we just sung about not too long ago. The kind of community that in the midst of concrete or a world that craves concrete to be paved over everything, we are going to keep growing up in God's grace and love, pushing through those parts of materialism that we get caught up in, and we're going to support one another. We're going to walk with one another as we continue to learn to be that kind of people that opens up and treads lightly and lives simply, that all might simply live. And so may God bless the beauty of this creation that we find ourselves in. And may God bless our journey together toward a simpler way of life and simpler way of being together. Amen.
If I could see a love go out of space through all of the stars.